The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management.
Hi, Peter Scheinfeld here, rocking at night every Friday night at 11 p.m. on WRCA Watertown, Boston.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, live from Boston. It's Tube Talk on Friday nights. Gentlemen, thanks for choosing Tube Talk. We are the solution to your radio problems. We broadcast on Friday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, WRCA Radio 1330 a.m., and streaming on the WRCA 1330 a.m. website. Thank you very much for joining us and being part of our campaign. We ask every listener to rise up and insist that fine music, interesting talk, be celebrated and played on the radio. That's right, the radio, each and every week. And furthermore, to be listened to on a fine, well-restored, vintage vacuum tube radio. Thank you, TubeNicks. We are winning the battle, despite what you may hear. We are trying to spread the word that real radios glow in the dark, have interesting, warm dial faces, not the cold, clammy LED displays that are too common. And, you know, I think those green-color digital displays are even more clammy and remote-feeling than the red. So you can give me that genuine warmth and glow of a vintage silver tone, Philco, True Tone, Traveler, Ward's Airline. You know, that just gets me right here. Tell me your vintage radio feelings. You can reach the show at tubetalk1@gmail.com. You can get on the radio couch and tell the doctor why you feel your radio is leaving you feeling a little cold and unwanted. We have your prescription. Get yourself a super Class A audio output system, a pair of triode connected number 42 tubes in push-pull format, like from a big Philco model 116. That's the ticket.
Have you seen the well-to-do upon Lenox Avenue, on that famous thoroughfare, with their noses in the air? High hats and colored collars, white spats and $15, spending every dime for a wonderful time. If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem splits, putting on the Ritz, spangled gowns upon the bevy of high browns from down the levee, all misfits, putting on the Ritz. That's where each and every Lulu Belle goes, every Thursday evening with her swell bows, rubbing elbows. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the Ritz.
Boys, look at that man putting on that Ritz. You look at him, I can.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem splits, putting on the Ritz, spangled gowns upon the bevy of high browns from down the levee, all misfits, putting on that certain Ritz. That's where each and every Lulu Belle goes, every Thursday evening with her swell bows, rubbing elbows. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the Ritz. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the
That's Warren Tucker with Wee Bonnie Baker on the vocal. My name is Paul Burish. This is Tube Talk. Thanks for joining us. That's the second time we've opened the show with Happy Days Are Here Again. And that was a good suggestion from a listener. So you can make a suggestion. You can tell me your feelings about this program at tubetalk1@gmail.com. We are the Analog Avengers. We're here to preserve and to reintroduce a beautiful AM radio experience for each and every one of you every Friday night. Thanks for being here. We'll give you a little clue as to our interview tonight. I'll just ask you this question, friends. Do you feel you're paying too much for cable TV? Well, you can get in the time machine with us tonight, and maybe we can just do something about that. I used to play with radio. Now it pays me good money. J.E. Smith showed me how to start a radio service business without capital. I will train you to cash in on radios, spare and full time. You won't believe it. Many radio experts make $30, $50, $75 a week. Let me ask you folks, do you want to make more money? The worldwide use of radio has made opportunities for you to have a spare or full-time radio service business of your very own. 3 out of 4 homes in the United States have radio sets, which regularly require repairs, servicing, new tubes. Many sets are old and tired, and will soon be replaced by new models. I will train you at home, in your spare time, to sell, install, and service all types of radio sets, to start your own radio business, and build it up like you wouldn't believe. Earn money. Earn money now. It's the business to be in. Mail this easy coupon for my 64-page book. It's free, and it shows you how others have become successful radio men. That's the J.E. Smith National Radio Institute, Washington, D.C. I think this will sound better than all that palaver.
Yours till the stars have no glory. Yours till the birds fail to sing. Yours to the end of life's story. This pledge to you, dear, I bring. Yours in the gray of December. Here distant shore, I've never loved anyone the way I love you. How could I, when I was born to be just yours?
Quiero yo a quiero yo a ti. Es imposible, mi cielo, tan separados vivir, tan separados vivir.
That was Yours, Jimmy Dorsey and his orchestra. Some very nice vocal work there. Bob Eberle, Helen O'Connell. And that's from the collection of Mr. Ron Ramirez, who's supplied music to this program before. One of our musical directors, and he's over there in his tuxedo in the booth telling me just how fine he enjoyed those two songs. Tube Talk is absolutely thrilled to have a returning guest. Steve McVoy joins us tonight from the Early Television Museum in Hilliard, Ohio. And we're going to solve the problem if you think you're paying too much for your cable TV. We're going to talk a little bit about a concept that Zenith pioneered called Phone Vision. And Steve, thanks for being on the program. I appreciate you coming on.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Well, you know, it just goes to show you what's new is never really new. And before we get a little bit into Phone Vision, I would just mention to the audience, if you haven't visited the Early Television Museum website, I would encourage you to. That's where I came across this gem of a topic. And it's just packed with information on TV, TVs, lots of different resources are available. And I believe that's earlytelevision.org is the way to find you guys. Is that correct, Steve?
That's right.
Very good. Now, you know, for those who think cable TV is some new invention and you have to go to one of these big companies and sign your life away to pay outrageous monthly fees, maybe you could give us a little background. Zenith had a pioneering idea way back in the day, and apparently they were experimenting with this as early as like 1931, from what I understand, of having a decoding system available, and the idea was so that you could watch first-run movies, exciting special programs, shows not available on free broadcast TV, all available through Zenith Phone Vision. And, you know, it just struck me as, you know, you could just steal that ad copy today and use it for Comcast or Verizon. How did this all get conceived and started? This was a pretty big thing in its day, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was Phone Vision was the first of a long string of experiments to figure out what would work with charging for television. And started in 1951. The idea for the technology, at least, went back a few years before that. But Zenith was the first. And then after that, there was a stream of experiments, both on over-the-air stations and on cable systems, that finally culminated in the pay television and video on demand that we have today.
Now, apparently, from what I was reading, the whole sort of the gist of this is that Zenith would broadcast a signal, but also there'd be a component of the signal that someone would actually have to dial up and request, and it would come back to you via your phone line through a decoding box, and then they would combine that with the signal that was coming out over the air, and you would get a clear picture to watch. Is that, in essence, how this thing ran?
Yes. What they did was that they garbled the picture that they transmitted.
I see.
And then they transmitted correction information over the phone line. So you needed that information from your phone to put the picture back together.
Well, you know, I love the diagram from the section on your site there. It shows the rotary phone, you know, in a finger.
Right.
We're dialing
right
in on the rotary phone, and there looks like there's an army of these very well-coiffed women at the switchboard operator there who are just waiting to send you the latest in television programming to your TV. It is just so cool. I couldn't get over it. Now, what was the content like on this? What was the catch? Was it really worth it for the average viewer to sign up or get involved in something like this? It seemed like they had some stuff that you couldn't get anywhere else at the time.
Well, they had a number of movies that they talked Hollywood into providing. They were 2 years old. They weren't current movies.
Mm-hmm.
which of course is a negative. You know, the newer the film is, the more likely people are to pay for it.
Sure, sure.
But and of course it was only one channel, so I haven't seen a program schedule. But my guess is that they only did one movie at a time. You know, maybe one movie a night. Which sort of limited the revenue potential. So, to answer your question, I don't think it was worth it for the average person. This was a test. They were trying to learn what would work. There were only 300 homes involved, so they were trying to see whether people would pay for movies. And by the way, they paid $1 a movie, which is with inflation is about $9 today. So the movies weren't cheap.
Yeah, and you know, considering those were the days too when people would go to the movies, you know, and you probably get in for you know, less than that certainly, and get a couple of newsreels and a cartoon and a lead feature picture and a nice grade B. You know, you could spend the whole night there. So it was a little money out of pocket. But, you know,
yes.
Zenith was right there. I mean, it's a concept that essentially is the building block for what cable TV is that we'll have special programming. It will be designed. It will be paid for. You'll need to have some type of a decoder box, which, you know, millions and millions of people still have a descrambler or a decoding box. So it's so close to what reality is today. It was something that, you know, really struck me. And now Zenith, was this something that you would need a Zenith set for, or would you have to modify your set in some way?
I don't think so. Again, the details of the technology are sort of sketchy today, but as I understand it, the converter box hooked to the antenna terminals of your TV,
mm-hmm.
and the phone line hooked into the converter box. Now, Zenith did make a few sets back in the early 50s that had a phone vision jack on the back of them.
I see.
And I'm not sure how that played into it, but I think you could use any set with their original experiment.
Well, I'm sure if you visited your local Zenith dealer, he would have been happy to tell you that with these wonderful Zenith sets that we have here, specially designed. You know, I mean, again, they had the right idea all along. You can easily see how something like that would play as far as putting it out into distribution in the network. And I guess they also had something. Not only could you call and, you know, pay for it over the phone or get a bill, but they had systems set up where you'd put coins in, almost like a vending machine, and you could watch that way. You could get the information to unscramble that signal.
I think the original Zenith system, it was 300 homes in a Chicago suburb, and the billing was done by the phone company.
I see.
You got a monthly bill.
So you were going to get one anyway? They had that. That was perfect, yeah.
That's right. And they made a deal with the phone company to have the bill, to have the charge added to the phone bill. Now, after they shut down the Chicago operation, they had to shut it down because Zenith had this TV station since 1939 in Chicago, an experimental station. And in 1953, I think, the FCC reshifted channel allocations for Milwaukee and Chicago, and Zenith had to go off the air with their station. But they then modified this system to make it work without a phone line. They transmitted the decoding information within the audio signal of the television station.
Very interesting.
And they tried it, I think, in WOR, a station in New York, and mm-hmm. then a station in Hartford, Connecticut. And they were running until the early 60s with it. And I believe that system used a coin box rather than billing from the phone.
Calling it on the phone. You know, that's fascinating, and it's interesting to see too how you know, so many of the similarities. I mean, in who likes today's cable company? I have a feeling that if I call the phone vision number, I would probably get more prompt, professional, and courteous service than I get when I call and I have to pick from one of the 300 options that are available.
Right.
And please listen carefully, because we've recently changed them all. And then you have the voice that says, I don't understand your selection. Let's review those options again.
Right.
So give me phone vision any day over that. But, you know, it was great. On the site, there's you know, a poster there for Alan Ladd movie with Dorothy L'Amour and Robert Preston. So, right. You know, there was a little sizzle to go along with the whole thing to try to make it worthwhile. And, you know, leave it to Zenith. I mean, a very experimental company, you know, one of the leaders in FM. I know they had an early experimental FM station. Before FM was really commercially viable, and then this whole phone vision scene. And, you know, Zenith, again, you're more of a TV expert than I am, but, you know, Zenith had such a great reputation for building a quality set. Even one of the last guys standing in the game here in the U.S., hand-wiring chassis and all, you know, it's not surprising that they came up with a great idea like this. Now, right. Did any of this equipment survive, or any of their... any of the stuff that they use to transmit or to receive that somebody might see somewhere?
You know, who knows?
Yep.
There is, the assets of Zenith were bought by a Korean company.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, in a Chicago suburb, a warehouse that contains a bunch of early Zenith radio and television equipment, including some of their pre-war TV receivers, that is sort of in limbo. And that warehouse may contain some of that equipment. I don't know. Now, there are decoders from the early 60s experiments that I mentioned, that come on the market periodically. In fact, we just got one for the museum. So there are a few of those around. But not the original decoders that were used. I've never seen one of the original decoders from the 1950 experiment.
You know, it would just be a treasure trove, you know, if somebody could get in there and take a look at what was available. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, you know, in a building still in Chicago, because I don't know if it's the same one, but I was, as sometimes known to do, I was poking around online, and someone from the Chicago area who was a radio enthusiast had taken some photographs, and they weren't that old, of a building, and it was all graffitied and windows busted, and, I mean, it really looked in tough shape. And apparently it was a large building. Some parts were better than others. But I'm just wondering if that's, you know, just locked up somewhere, you know, in the city, and it's, you know, slowly crumbling before your very eyes, and it's just sitting there waiting, you know, for an arsonist or for something bad to happen. And,
yeah.
You know, it would be great if whoever is in control of that, whatever the corporate entity is, unless they have some use for that type of information, to pass it on to somebody, you know, like yourself at the museum, or to some organization that would be willing to preserve it and to, you know, make it, you know, put it in the public interest,
right.
Because it's a little bit of history. And even something like up at the AWA, maybe they could find a home for it. But it always sort of heartbreaking when you see the stuff that sits there. The guys who wrote the books on Zenith radios, Cones and Bryant, had access. Apparently they were able to get their hands on some of Commander McDonald's personal records. And again, this was something that had been stuffed in a warehouse and just sat there. So,
right.
I mean, that would be a wonderful find if somebody could get in there to get a little bit more information on it. And, you know, I look through the ad copy that goes with this, and I look through the you know, just the whole way that they promoted it, and they were thinking of promoting it, and it just seems to be so spot on with cable. And I guess the fear was at the time that it was expensive to run a television station in the early days, and the equipment was expensive, and the costs were expensive, so that if you had three or four broadcast stations in a particular city, there may not be enough ad revenue to adequately support them, so some of them would be losing money. So Zenith actually had the vision to say, okay, if that's the case, and we can, you know, they might not have envisioned technology changing that end of the equation, they said, hey, this might be a solution for that. We actually could charge for watching TV shows. It's just a brilliant idea. Do you know if there was a particular person or persons over at Zenith who was conceiving this thing, or did it come out of McDonald's office?
I don't. I really don't know.
Yeah.
You mentioned that these early pay TV experimenters were fighting an uphill battle against two groups. One was the FCC. The FCC was very negative on pay television. It was their view that since there were a limited number of stations, that pay TV If you had pay TV stations in cities, that would reduce the amount of free programming.
Sure, it would hurt the general public, yeah.
And the other even bigger obstacle that they had was Hollywood and the movie theater operators. Hollywood was scared to death that television anyway was going to hurt their business a great deal, and Hollywood made it very difficult for, I don't know Zenith specifically. Well, I think the fact that they got movies that were 2 years old.
yeah, that kind of tells you how high it was on the list.
Hollywood was not willing to risk diluting their theater revenue.
Sure.
And of course, antagonizing their theater owners, who, you know,
right.
Of course, without them, they would be out of business. So,
sure.
Both the FCC slowly liberalized the rules, and in the 60s they started allowing TV stations, some independent stations, to broadcast pay TV, and then the movie theater. It took Hollywood until the 90s really to change their attitude toward pay television.
Right, when they would actually help, you know, do made for TV movies, and the idea was that, you know, they were looking at their writing on the wall, which was, hey, someday people aren't going to be willing to come into the theaters anymore, which they still do. Surprisingly, the numbers that still go to the movies surprise me, given Redbox and pay cable and all the other options.
It's a different experience, and it's the same thing. You know, radio, everybody predicted that television was going to kill radio.
Well, that's true.
Quite healthy. And then they predicted that television was going to kill movie attendance, but the opposite is true.
Well, you know, who am I to
talk? Whether in the future that's going to be the case, we don't know.
You know, who am I to even talk about that? Because I actually went to a drive-in this summer. So
really? Yeah, there's still a few of them around.
And they do it as a very retro experience with the vintage ads to visit the snack stand and all that. So
right.
It is interesting how this all plays together with you know, how media works. And right. Interesting in that. You know, it's funny. I have cable TV. I don't, you know, I have not gone completely to vacuum tube AM and shortwave radios for my
right.
listening and entertaining pleasure. So I do have a cable connection, and I have a TV that's in the cable. But rather than pay the cable company anything more, I have another set, and I watch the digital signal over the air. And honestly, I'm very impressed with the quality of the picture. And, you know, it's funny, it's albeit on a smaller scale, I find myself with, you know, whatever I can get in the Boston area, about 22, 23 channels of digital TV with an antenna, and I do the same thing I do on the other TV that I have about 100. I can sit there and drool and click through them all and say, gee, there's nothing on. Well, I can do that
right.
on the cable TV, and I have to pay
right.
$100-something. Well, at least I get the computer connection out of it as well. So
yeah.
It is interesting. You know, it's almost like it's gone the other way. I'd take, you know, the digital signal isn't bad, and I have a friend up here who you'd like to visit his house. He loves TV, and he has, I believe it's either an Admiral or a Bendix TV, but it's a very large piece of Bakelite. It's a solid one-piece cabinet made out of Bakelite, and it has a nice picture on it, and he has his converter box there, and I'll go over occasionally, and we'll watch some of the old shows. He only has one modern TV in the house. Everything else he watches is on a vintage set, so... Have to give him some credit. He would he'd love to come out to your place.
We'd love to have him.
And visit. And it was funny, too, because the first time after we had you on, one of the folks here at the station said, gee, I was just out there last summer, and as a matter of fact, I've got a bunch of pictures. So he sent me a whole file of all these shots when he was out there visiting the museum, and he had a blast and really loved it. So, you know, for anybody who's going out that way or visiting anybody in the Ohio area, if you're a TV buff or you like old media, you really need to check out the Early Television Museum in Hilliard. You can find their website. They have regular hours. There's an awful lot of neat stuff to look at, and it brings back a lot of memories for us. You know, the tail end of the baby boomers who like to go out and watch all that TV. You know, you see some of the sets you might have watched it on as a kid. So, hey, Steve, I appreciate you coming on and talking a little bit about phone vision. Too bad it couldn't hang on, because, you know, it would have been one less thing for us to grump about. We could have paid Zenith
instead of grumping about it. Because it's real easy to do a good job with customer service with 300 customers.
I know.
so we'd be complaining about them, I'm sure.
I know. Well, if we couldn't complain about it, it wouldn't be any fun. Hey, Steve,
thanks for
taking some time tonight and being on. I appreciate it. Have a great night.
You too.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
La, 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 la. la 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 la. Mother told me always to follow the golden rule, and she said it's really a sin to be mean and cruel. So remember, if you're untrue, angels up to heaven are looking at you. You'll never get to heaven if you break my heart, so be very careful not to make us part. You won't get to heaven if you break my heart. Oh no, I've been hearing rumors about how you play around, though I don't believe what I hear, still it gets me down.
Studebaker, yours in six stunning styles for 60, including the new convertible and...
Look what else is new for you. It's here, it's here, it's here, it's here. It's a new Lark wagon with four convenient doors. And it's styled for fun and frolic, but it's built for chores.
Look at the Lark yourself. Learn how it's been proven by 750 million miles of owner use. Visit your Studebaker dealer and see how nothing has been spared to build quality into the Lark. Discover why it's the value car of the year.
The Lark is the car of the year.
Well, thanks again, Steve, for joining us tonight. We had our guest was Steve McVoy from the Early Television Museum in Hilliard, Ohio. I would urge you to check out that website. You can spend hours. I mean, there's just so much content, so much neat stuff to look at, so many interesting stories to read. I can just sit there. You know, the next thing I know, it's time for Betty Bye. You know, I had an interesting email from somebody, and the reason I played Dionne Warwick, Mike in Pennsylvania emails, I loved listening to music on AM radio in the car. Do you know when vacuum tubes left car radios? Well, you know, I don't really know specifically. I would guess about the same time that the solid state and transistor radios started to invade the shelves at retailers' stores for home use. And I know we had on Olin not long ago when we talked about a Motorola set that was still tubes and came out just about 1960. It was an FM set, so I'd probably say about the mid-60s. If anybody has some more information on that, drop me an email at tubetalk1@gmail. We'll pass it along to Mike. And that might be a great topic for a whole other night of conversation, the car radio, which in and of itself is a whole separate subsection and subculture to the antique radio world. And, you know, well into the 60s and 70s, there was music on AM in the car. A lot of cars still only had AM. And I can remember vividly as a kid, you know, I can tell you certain places I was. You hear artists like Maria Muldaur and Glenn Campbell, Dionne Warwick on that nice Delco, and good sounds and a lot of good vibes from that era.
By gum.
With 5 different flavors, with extra flavor for the whole family and every stripe.
Luscious lime Sprite.
Lip smack and lemon Sprite.
Delicious orange Sprite.
Mixed fruit and cherry Sprite. All for you in every pack of Beechnut Fruit Sprite gum. By Beechnut,
by gum,
by tea,
by gum,
by king,
by gum,
by gush,
by gum.
And there's extra flavor for the whole family in every scrumptious Sprite.
More flavor to choose, more flavors to choose.
The flavor starts lively,
the flavor stays lively. By Beechnut,
by Beechnut,
by gum,
by gum,
by gum. Beechnut Fruit Sprite for the whole family, by gum.
Thank you.
This is a good time of the year to thank all of you at your station for your interest in presenting the Boris Karloff program. It's a real pleasure to work with you all, and I appreciate your cooperation very much indeed. May I also wish you and yours a most Merry Christmas and a prosperous and a happy New Year.
All right, Boris, get back in that crypt. It's not anywhere near Christmas. Anyway, this is Tube Talk. We had Tex Beneke with some Blues in the Night. Les and Larry Elgart with their version of String of Pearls. Thanks so much for listening tonight. We appreciate your listenership. Tell your friends, your enemies, your relatives, all your pals in the antique radio hobby, or just those folks you know who love good music on AM. It's Friday nights for Tube Talk, right here on WRCA 1330. Well, as we get ready to go our separate ways here tonight, here's the Letterman.
Wish I may, wish I might, have this wish I wish tonight. When you wish upon star, makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dream, no request is to dreamers do. Fate is kind. She brings to those who love the sweet fulfillment of their secret
Thanks for listening, folks. That's all from Tube Talk. See you next week.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone, that's all, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love whose burning light will warm the winter night. That's all, that's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you'll adore for now and evermore. That's all. That's all. Wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you'll adore for now and evermore. That's all. That's all.